I love watching domino toppling videos. Have you ever seen those on YouTube? You know, the thousands of dominoes go flying over. I got one I'll show you in a second, but just there's a layout, always a layout usually. Well, I should say almost always a layout of dominoes. And it's commonly called a domino run. It's a run of dominoes. And there's something for me mesmerizing about it, just the almost effortless activity of the dominoes toppling over one after another. And often you get these really complex patterns that have been created. Once the first domino is tipped over, the whole thing unfolds in what is an effortless sequence of simple cause and effect. One domino hitting another, hitting another, hitting another. Sometimes one domino will hit two dominoes and start two flows of dominoes. It just keeps going on until the last one falls over. The record number toppled in one domino run is 4,491,863 dominoes. That's pretty big. You know, we're used to talking like billions and trillions of dollars of debt, right? Well, but 4,491,863 dominoes, that's a lot of dominoes. I wouldn't want to have to clean that up, I can tell you that. The one I'm going to show you right now is a smaller domino layout. It's one that was designed and set up by one woman, 15,000 dominoes, but it's still very effective. So let's take a look. I feel like I go back there too much. So. Oh, there we are. Okay, start, why don't you, see if you can start over again. Oh, there we go. Ah, here we go.
Thank you for watching. This took me like 25 hours spread over 8 days to build, and this is my third largest project I've ever built by myself. So if you liked it, be sure to hit the thumbs up, subscribe for more Domino videos. I am Evish Bhatt.
Pretty amazing though, eh? Yeah. You know, most of the Domino videos that are out there don't show you the setup at all. I've never actually seen one before, actually. I'm sure there are documentaries about it, but this video begins by showing the setup of it. And watching this young woman at work, I'm now as equally fascinated by the setup of the domino run as the run itself. I mean, how does one come up with that kind of layout? Like, that's amazingly creative, don't you think? And the level of detail involved, like laying out the different color blocks so they work, and the planning is so intricate. And then, of course, there's the knowledge of learning how dominoes fall. It might seem pretty easy, but you know, one little error in that and the whole thing may not work properly. So you have to understand this very simple process of cause and effect so that when the domino run begins, there's no hiccups along the way that interrupt the flow. And finally, there's just the painstaking work of putting the domino run layout together. I'm afraid that I would just knock things over. Like imagine putting up 15,000 dominoes in the way that she had done. One mistake, one like little trip, one just little tremor in your hand might cause a miscue or a misstep that could bring the whole thing down, right? I don't know. There must be like little techniques that they'd use. Like they don't put dominoes in certain places. So the sequence is, if something does happen bad, it doesn't take the whole thing down. It only takes a part of it down. But imagine spending 25 hours of painstaking work putting each one up. No wonder it took that amount of time, right? I can imagine there would be a horrific feeling to make a little mistake and see 24 hours and 59 minutes and 59 seconds come toppling down before you're ready to film it. And as I say, I'm amazed by the precision and care. I just can't imagine being so focused for 24 hours like that and being so careful with what I do. But when you think about it in a way, you know, you and I are living examples of a domino run that's been going on for 4 billion years. Because each of us represents an uninterrupted, unbroken line of transmission of life from one generation to the next that goes all the way back to that first cell at the beginning of time, right to the very back, first life at the very beginning of the earth. The common scientific view today is that all life derives from one common source, what's called common descent. One domino at the very beginning of earthly time, the first cell, the one cell that begins a stream of life that cascades out to everything alive today. And we're all the fruit of that cascading effect, the domino run that began a long time ago that now finds its fulfillment in our lives today. An uninterrupted run of life each of us represents. Now, I think that's actually the idea of one cell at the beginning of the earth seems unlikely. There's many theorists now today who posit there's several originating points of life on the earth. You know, we've come from several sources, not just one, but whether that's one or many, it is important to understand that it's still this cascading movement of life out to us from a long time ago. You are the representative of a successful line of transmission. That's amazing when you think about it. 4 billion years long in you. We've been looking at some of the foundational doctrines of the United Church that rose when the church formed in 1925. I've got those up on some slides a little bit later that I'm going to call up now, Liz. They're called the Articles of Doctrine. And we've been through the preamble. We've looked at the article on God. We've looked at the article on Revelation and the article on divine purpose. Today, we're going to look at Article 4 of Creation and Providence. And remember, these were written in 1925 as part of the Union of the United Church of Canada, when Methodists, Presbyterians, and Congregationalists came together to form a new Protestant church in our country. And this is what it says, of creation and providence. We believe that God is the creator, upholder, and governor of all things, that he is above all his works and in them all, that he made man in his own image, meet for fellowship with him, free and able to choose between good and evil, responsible to his maker and Lord. You know, one of the interesting things of you'll see in domino run videos is that at the very beginning of the domino run, there's nothing happening. There's all these dominoes set up. Something or someone has to begin the process of knocking over the first domino. The dominoes don't magically start falling on their own. I don't know if you noticed in the video that moment when the first domino flipped over. Unfortunately, because of the way our screen size is, the video is in 16:9, but our screen is actually the old TV style 4:3, which cuts off the edges, there's a little finger that comes through the screen. You can't see it, but I put it again in slow motion there for us. You'll have to, again, remove the... just try it there. Okay, there we are. There you got it. You got it. It probably went all the way through, though. Okay, I put it. Okay. So we're having this problem with the system. Okay, there we go. Yeah. I put it in slow motion for you, and then I put it really slow. Oh, try it. Just let it run again there. So anyway, you'll know on the far right-hand side, unfortunately, it's cut off. There's this little finger that sneaks in and pushes the first domino, right? And if you didn't really pay attention, you wouldn't notice it. Every domino run begins this way. It doesn't matter if it has... It's okay, we're good. It doesn't matter. If it has 10,000 or 10 million or 10 billion dominoes, it begins with a finger push. Or sometimes they'll give you a little more elaborate introduction. They'll make it a little bit more dramatic. The start, they'll have a little maybe lever they push down or something like that. But it's all the same thing. There's some outside force that begins the domino layout and starts the domino run and gets it going. And Article 4 wants to locate the source of the initial cause that gives rise to the reality, to the existence, and to life itself in someone or something that's beyond our creation. And it doesn't really matter if life began with one cell or began with several cells. The important issue in Article 4 is that the initial push has come from the outside of the layout, this creation. It has to. Can't come from within it. Life cannot start itself. Scientists have been looking for a chemical explanation for the rise of the first cell, and back in the 1950s, they thought they were getting very close to a solution. But every decade since, the goal of explaining the rise of life on Earth as a matter of chance is getting further and further and further away. And that's because as we study the cell, the simplest cell, the most simplest cell we could ever imagine, the more we understand how cells work, the more in amazement we stand at the complication and sophistication we find within them. When Darwin came up with his Origin of Species back in 1859, people believed that cells were just blobs. Today we understand that these are sophisticated entities. The simplest cell engages in metabolism, respiration, and protein synthesis, and in cell division. The processes involve intricate biochemical reactions orchestrated by organelles to produce energy, to produce build molecules, to ensure proper cell function and replication. And we're talking about millions and millions of processes taking place in the simplest cell every second. And you know, we're made up of about 8 trillion cells in our bodies on average, something like that. We have 8 trillion magnificent little creations at work inside of us. It's amazing when you think about it. The simplest cell is more complicated than the most complex domino run that has ever been attempted. We could have a domino run of a trillion dominoes with a super sophisticated layout, and it would still pale in comparison to the complexity and sophistication of the simplest cell. Bill Gates, in talking about the coding system that exists at the base of life, we call it DNA, but it's a giant code. He says that it's far more advanced than any computer program. He says, literally, DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software ever created. And how did a complex coding system in the cell, a sophisticated layout beyond anything any human being has ever done up to this point, how did that come about by random chance? Sally and I were looking at beautiful flowers in our backyard a couple days ago. Incredibly intricate and stunning creations these flowers are. Sometimes we just go by them, you know, we just walk by them. We don't really look at them. But if you stop and take a really good look, they're magnificent. each one in its own way. Stunning creations. And we were watching all the bees moving through the flower patch. And they too, when you take a good look at them, are remarkable creations. Like, they're remarkable. So intricate and wonderfully made are they too. And the whole web of life that we could feel unfolding in our little flower patch was an inspiration for us, a moment of true ecstasy. And there's no doubt that there are mechanisms at work in life, like random selection and random variation and natural selection, like dominoes falling in a series. But where did the layout of life come from? Where did the layout of life come from? Who designed the plan underneath life? The dominoes in that video only fall the way they do because a young woman spent hours and hours laying out the plan in an intricate detail, carefully, meticulously laying out the dominoes. The dominoes couldn't have arranged themselves in that way at all. There was no chance of that. Where did that layout come from? Well, it came from a mind at work. The philosopher David Belinsky said that we should trust our intuitions about life. That when we see design, it's because there is design. And if there is design in any facet of life, in nature, in a domino run, or anything else you can imagine, there must be a designer. If there's a design, there has to be a designer. If there's a layout before us, it's because it was put there. In the United Church, as a Christian faith community, we believe that God is the creator of all things. We believe God is the upholder of all things. We believe that God is the governor of all things. God stands outside his work as any great artist does, as any great artist must do. In the same way that that young woman stood outside the design, the layout that she created. And yet, like any great artist, God's work is, and God's character is found within his work. The character of God is found in the creation that we see around us and in the design of this wonderful and most joyous creation that we are a part of. It's bound up with his creations like any artist finds in their work. The Bible says that the culmination of God's artistry is found in his creation of human beings. If you go through all of Genesis 1, there's a culmination. At the end of Genesis 1, God makes human beings in his own image. God makes man in his own image. God invests human beings with a degree of divinity. God shares his artistry with us. That's why we can come up with intricate designs like that young woman. That's why there's so much beauty around us in the artwork of the church here, the stained glass and the music that we sing every Sunday in the clothing that we wear. Well, some of yours is pretty boring, but I look past that, okay? But, you know, seriously, though, it's one. We take it for granted, the intelligence that lives around us within our own circles and within the natural world, too. And God made us as human beings for fellowship. God didn't just make us for the sake of making us. We are meant to have an ongoing and life-giving relationship with our Creator. We're not simply objects of God's creative impulse. We are sentient creatures made in the image of God. That means we have certain attributes of God within us such that we can know God and have a relationship with God, collaborate with God in this world, and live in harmony with God's intentions. And God intended us to be moral agents as well, that we could know right from wrong, good from evil. God made us in such a way that we have the freedom to choose between the two. And God made us to be accountable to him for what we are and what we become. All that has been given to us by our Maker, all that's been placed within us, all that's been entrusted to us, makes us responsible to our Maker and Lord. And that's what Article 4 of our Articles of Doctrine is talking about. When you read through the first chapter of Genesis, you have these days of creation. There are 6 days of creation. And within the 6 days of creation, 10 times God makes this pronouncement. And God said. It's all through Genesis 1. And God said, and God said, and God said. 10 times. The word for said in Hebrew is debar. Debar gets translated as said, but it means more than simply speech. I mean, debar is, of course, first of all about speaking. The sound of speaking, you can hear the sound of my voice today, the meaning within the words themselves that you understand that I'm saying to you. If I was speaking Japanese, you probably wouldn't understand what I'm saying. You'd hear the sound, but there'd be no meaning for you. There's the performance of speaking. We perform in our speaking. Sometimes we're shy, and we're muffled. Sometimes we stutter. Sometimes we lose our train of thought. There's a certain performance in speaking. And then there's also the meaning that we share in our conversations with each other, the dialogue, the discourse between us. That's all debar. But in Hebrew, debar means more than that. I want you to think about the Grand River Cruise that some of you are going on. Who's going on that Grand River Cruise? So quite a few of you here today are going. You know, I imagine there's some anticipation in the cruise you're going on and the planning of how you're going to get there. And I can imagine you being excited as you stand in the lineup to board the boat. And then there's the sound of the horn as the boat leaves the dock and goes off into the river, that sound of the horn. And there's the chatter that surrounds you as everyone settles in for the trip. That is all part of the meaning of debar. The Grand River Cruise, it's not just an intellectual idea. It's filled with all these experiences that go along with it. There's the shimmering of the waves on the Grand River that you notice as the boat travels along, the sun shining on the nape of your neck, the wind brushing up against your face, the food that you enjoy while you're sitting at a table with some of your neighbors, the feeling of satisfaction of having said, yes, I'm going. Because sometimes we don't go. You could have said no to going on the Grand River Cruise. This is all connected to debar in Hebrew. The debar of the Grand River Cruise is the totality of the experience. It's not just an intellectual idea. It includes words, but a lot more than words. And when I ask you about the trip, you're not going to treat it as an intellectual idea alone. You're going to tell me about your experiences and what you went through on the trip and how it made you feel. That is debar in Hebrew. It's a lot more than an intellectual idea. When it says in Genesis 1, and God said, it's not just words coming out of God's mouth. And it's not like some kind of magic incantation that God's up to. What we're talking about in debar is the totality of God's mind, will, and creativity at work in the moment. And that's God's debar at work in creation. God is committed completely with everything that God has in creating the universe that we are part of. So when God says, let there be light, it wasn't just like God turned on a light switch for us. This was a moment of God's will and mind and creativity coming together and bringing about the reality of light. All that light is in visual and sensual and meaning sense. Bringing it into existence. And this happens 10 times again and again in the book of Genesis. 10 times God enters into the creative act, ushering in something new into reality. 10 times God's finger extends into this creation and ushers in a new experience, a new dimension to life. And it culminates, all of it, at the very end of Genesis 1 in the creation of human beings. And God said, let us make mankind, let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness. And it says that God created humankind in his image. God took his image and put it within us. Male and female, he created them. This was the last and defining act of that initial creation God had begun at the very beginning of time. And I want you to think about that. All the amazing things that God was up to in those first 6 days, all the magnificent creation God was working through and on that was accomplished. The galaxies, the stars, the planets, the trees, the butterflies, the birds, the tomato plants, the worms, the volcanoes, the mountains. And this amazing interweaving of life. God, as the great artist, goes about creating the universe and all that is within it. And as he brings it into existence through his mind, will, and creativity, there's this sense of joy and wonder that runs through Genesis 1. It keeps building upon itself. Every time God makes this end, God said, every time God begins an act of creation, there's this sense of increasing joy and wonder that runs through the whole first chapter of the book of Genesis. And each time God creates, it says at the end, and God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. There's this growing chorus of goodness that permeates the whole creation account, that original blessing, the original goodness that encompasses everything that God was about in creation. And it finds its fulfillment in human beings, the human race, in you and me. There's a lot that goes wrong in life. There's a lot that goes wrong in people, in situations, in relationships. There's an immense amount of corruption and deceit in the world. There's reckless selfishness. There's lots of pain and suffering, too. We all know that. It's so easy to become mesmerized by it, to be consumed by it, to be shaped by it, to be diminished by it, to be corrupted by it. But before that all came about, it was good. It was very good. Everything that God touched was good. Everything that God does touch is good. You sometimes hear talk about original sin and the corruption that goes with it. But it's important to remember that before any of this, there was original blessing. Because all of it, everything in creation, including you and me, came from the mind and will and creativity of God. And here's the good news. God is still at work today in our world. The great artist is still creating. His finger still extends out into people's lives, starting a new domino sequence, a new domino run in your life. Through his mind and will and creativity, God is still upholding all of creation and is committed to rescuing it and restoring it to what it was meant to be. And perhaps his most creative act of all, perhaps God's most creative act of all, God became one of us in Christ Jesus. And he did this so he could offer us an invitation. He could extend to us an invitation. God extends to you and me an amazing invitation in Jesus. Join me, God says, join me in bringing about a new creation that will free the goodness of the old. Become collaborators of love with me. And let's together get this world on the path it was always meant for.